All right, as far as announcements go, we do have, again, several ways that you can connect with us, and that's through the YouTube lessons throughout the week for the kids and the teens that you can check in on Facebook. You can check in through the morning workout session with Pastor and just diving into devotional, and then you can also be involved with the midweek services, the Bible study at 7 on Wednesday, and the youth group at 8 o'clock. And so I trust that you'll be able to stay connected with everything that's going on, that you would give through the avenues that you can, through the online portal, through mailing in your offering, or through bringing it in from Monday through Friday, 9 to noon. And God uses that in a huge way. God blesses our offerings, and we've been able to minister in many different ways throughout the world with what God puts on your heart to give. So thank you for all those that have been giving during this time. And some have started giving as a new thing in their life. And I just want to thank everyone for being a part of that. But there are other different avenues with the ladies event coming up that you could be a part of. A lot of you have gotten the announcement there. And so please RSVP for that. Call into the office and do so they can prepare for you on June 6th. And I know that the Wormleys are going to be coming as well that first weekend of June. And so I'm excited. I actually went to school with Josh Wormley. And so I'm excited to have them with us. And he will be presenting their ministry again. Then we have the McPhails coming, I believe, the week after that. And so they're going to come and present. So we've got a lot of unique things coming up. And I know a lot of things will be changing over time because camp schedules have changed. And VBS, we might have to be a little bit flexible with that. And so just be flexible. Please be forgiving in the things that we do need to change to fit the times that we are in. So I believe that's it for all the announcements that I'd like to give. So we're going to jump right into a congregational that we learned during our missions conference. It's called Only a Holy God. So please sing along with it.
Who else commands all the hosts of heaven? Who else can make every king bow down? Who else can whisper and darkness tremble? Only a holy holy just invites me to call him Father. Only a holy God, come and behold him, the one and the only, cry out, sing holy, forever a holy God, come and worship the holy God.
All right. It's good to be able to have that song again, and it just reminds me of how good God is. And that's exactly the reminder that we need as we dive into Job chapter 9 and 10. And I titled this My Search for Reasoning. And we try to find reasoning all through our lives. We're trying to find reasoning for this coronavirus, and I don't know if you've heard, but in Midland, Michigan, there were two dams that broke, and they had some major flooding displacing thousands of people, and people that I know that are displaced because of this flooding, and you can only imagine all the questions that are coming up. Why, God? Why are you allowing this? Why are you... And some might even jump into, why are you making this happen? Why are you hurting us in this way? Why would you allow for us to have the coronavirus and huge hornets and crazy politicians and floods and what else? What else can come? And all of a sudden, in our search for reasoning, we start turning against our God. And that can become a major issue. And so I want to encourage you, before we even dive into this, the main point is this. Don't let your search for reasoning become, don't become so infatuated with that it becomes more of an idol to you than searching for God, which should be our main point. We should be searching for him in the midst of all of this, trying to dive deeper in our relationship with him, grasping onto him. He is our refuge, our shield, our defender, our tower. I mean, how many things does, David, he struggled with it. He questioned a lot, but yet he always came back to, you are my salvation, you're my defender, my tower. He described God in so many different ways. And so as Job dives into this, this is a response to Bildad, who based his points off of a limited history. He only cut and paste what he wanted to out of history in order to have this sort of understanding to throw or to jab Job with. And he even jabbed him with, hey, your children deserved what they got. They must have sinned in order to get what they have gotten. And all you're doing, Job, is creating this horrific wind with your words. It's a destructive wind that as you speak, it destroys. Job, this is all that you're doing. And Job, how does he respond to that? You know, I gave a temptation of mine last week in the sense of my temptation would be just to punch him right in the face. I mean, that would be my response, especially with the accusations. But does Job do that? Should I do that? Should we respond in anger and punching someone in the face? No, we shouldn't. But how does Job respond? And he starts off in these first 13 verses, and he talks about how my God is transcendent. My God is transcendent. And you say, well, what do you mean by that? Our God is different than human beings. If we were trying to describe him with human character traits or human limitations, he wouldn't be our God. Our God is very different than humanity. And so as he gets into this, and starting in verse 1, he starts talking about how my God is transcendent. It says there, then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth. But how should man be just with God? If you were to compare the two, you know, how could man stand before him and say, I'm just, especially with God coming down on him? He says, if he will contend with him, he cannot answer him one of a thousand. So if I want to fight him, if I want to debate with him, how can you answer? He says, he is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who hath hardened himself against him and hath prospered. So who's won? Who has gone up against God and won? Who's gone up against God and actually had success? There's no one. He understands the truth, and this is something that Eliphaz has kind of pointed out a little bit, and so has Bildad, and so has Zophar. I mean, all of these friends would start pointing this out, start taking little truths of who God is and use them against Job rather than actually helping him through this. And he's saying, who's actually had success debating with God and going against him? He says, which removes the mountains. Who? God. God could do that if he wanted to. And they know not. Which overturneth them in his anger. Which shaketh the earth out of her place. And the pillars thereof tremble. Which commandeth the sun, and it riseth not. If God wants to shut down the sun to where it... Obviously, the sun is not... revolving around the earth. We know that. We understand that. But it's our perspective. It looks as if it's rising. It looks as if it's setting. And he says, hey, listen, if God wants to stop it in its place and keep it from setting, from rising, he can do it. God has that power. We've seen that back when Joshua was fighting the enemy that they were dealing with, and he praised God and said, God, could you give us some time here? And God extended the day, the daylight, so that they could win the battle. And so God has that power, unlike us, who we do not have this power. God can do anything that he wants to do. God could stop Job's problems right now. And yet he hasn't. Why? Maybe that's the question that he's trying to ask. But he goes on and he says, which alone spreadeth out the heavens and treadeth upon the waves of the sea, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades, and the chambers of the south, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. There's so many things, God, that you've done. You've spread out the skies. You put the constellations in place. You've done all of these things, and we don't even understand all that you've done. And maybe Job should have just relished in that fact. God, we don't know everything that you've done. You've done so many wonderful things. You've done so many things that's out of our power. It's only within your power that you could do that. Maybe if he would have stopped there, but I think he's thinking too much about how, God, you could take this away from me if you wanted to. And he's trying to grasp too much understanding for him to relish in the fact of who God is and what he can do. And so he's going and he's saying, you can do whatever you want to do, God. It says in verse 11, lo, he goeth by me, and I see him not. He passeth on also, but I perceive him not. God is going by him, and he doesn't even see him. What's he trying to relay? He's saying, this relationship that I had with God doesn't seem to be even there. I can't see God. I'm blind to it. I am so overwhelmed and enclouded over with all of the problems that I'm facing. And even if you were to walk by, I could not see him pass by. Behold, he taketh away. Who can hinder him? Who can stop God from taking things away? Because that's who he thinks at this point has taken the things away from him. He believes it's God, who's using him for target practice, who's dumped the sands of the sea on top of. I mean, this is, behold, he taketh away. Who can hinder him? Who will say unto him, what doest thou? So how could we question him? And yet Job will question God. He will ask for reasoning. Verse 13, if God will not withdraw his anger, the proud helpers do stoop under him. I mean, God is all powerful. Anybody that could be prideful will stoop. Anybody that thinks that they could do something, that they can fight God, that they can contend with him, that they can question him, they will stoop. No one will be able to stand up to God. And this is how different our God is compared to who we are. And so if Job would have just stopped with some of the truths that he's already put on display about who our God is, maybe he would have done better off. But yet I cannot sit here and complain about what Job has done and how he's responded, because I think I would have done a lot worse. I think my response would have been different in many ways. I'm not sure. I've never been through it, so I can't sit here and judge Job for all that he's done. All I can state is if he could have jumped on these truths that he's already stated and just stopped there instead of just carrying on with some of the other things that he stated, I think he would have been better off. But yet, I am not God. I'm not God. And so we got to turn back and see who our God is and how he is different. He is transcendent. He is mighty. He is wise. He can do things that we have no idea about. And so does Job stop there? No, he doesn't. He goes into point number two, hopeless pleading of my case. He jumps right in and he puts the plea out there, even though he knows it's worthless. He's hopeless in the midst of this. He's going to try to plead his case. He's going to put out his supplications to God. But he feels it's worthless. Listen, if what does it say in James? It says you have to have faith when you ask for wisdom. Full faith, nothing wavering. Job's wavering. He's wavering big time. And we'll see that. He's confused later on down. We'll see how he's confused in his affliction. And all these things are coming in and deterring him from actually seeing who his God is. Because he says, even if he would have showed up, I wouldn't have known. I couldn't see him. So he has a hopeless pleading of his case. Starting in verse 14, it says, how much less shall I answer him and choose out my words to reason with him? Whom though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. He says, I was righteous. Okay, I was right with God here. But here's my plea. And he states something that he's almost stated before in verse 16. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice. He feels so far away from God that even if he did pray, he doesn't believe that God would listen. He's hopeless. As we're dealing with the trials that come in our way, and yes, you will deal with them. I will deal with them. That is a for sure. That is, it's just as sure as death and taxes, there will be trials. There will be trials in our life, and here he's come to a point where he doesn't even believe that God will actually speak to him. He doesn't know how he would respond in that sense. It says in verse 17, for he breaketh me with a tempest. Isn't that what is a reminder of what happened to his children? He breaks me with a tempest. Doesn't that keep coming up in his response to Bildad and the way that he said, there's a strong wind. Your words are just like a strong wind. And he's saying, God broke me with a tempest. Why? Because he lost his children in this strong wind that came in and tore the house down. Saying, I'm broken. And he multiplies my wounds without cause. There is no reason for God to multiply these wounds. He says, he will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. He's come to the point where he says, I can't even breathe in the midst of my turmoil, in the midst of all of my heartache. I am broken. I am without breath. And he fills me with bitterness. God fills us with bitterness. We know that that is not truth. But what happens in the midst of our conflict? We tend to dwell on how we feel and trying to reason through that. And the way that the other guys, Bildad and Eliphaz, are saying, hey, listen, this is your problem and it's God that's coming against you. He's starting to believe it. He's saying, God, here. This is what you've done to me. You've filled me up with bitterness. Instead of blessings, it's bitterness. And bitterness is something that can destroy people. It's over time to the point where you cannot recognize. It eats away. We were up on a roof a couple of weeks ago on the Birch's garage roof, and as you start to take off the shingles, you started to see some of the boards underneath. And one of the things that Barry stated was, hey, don't go too far down, you might fall through. What was going on? Well, the boards looked like they were okay from the top, but underneath it looked rotten. And as you got there, you didn't understand what was going on the inside and the weakness of that board. And maybe the shingles were covering over it, but you didn't want to go down too far. Otherwise, you might fall through. And I don't think Keely would like for me to break my legs in the midst of the coronavirus and have all kinds of more issues. What happened? As I'm looking at those boards, you don't really recognize it, but you do see here that it was eaten away. It was rotted out. That's what bitterness does to people. From the inside out, it eats away. And most of the time, they don't even recognize it. They don't recognize that they're bitter. It takes some outside source to come in and tell them, hey, man, I think you're struggling with some bitterness. It takes an outside person to come in and help them and exhort them. And that's why it's so needed for the community to come in and exhort. But Job's not getting this. He's not getting any pity. He's not getting anything from his friends that are showing up here. All he's getting is accusations. They're part of the wounds that are being multiplied upon Job. Just more and more. Verse 19, it says, if I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. So even in the midst of his own pleading, he says, I'm probably going to condemn myself in my own speech. If I try to justify myself, I'm probably going to get myself in trouble. Why? Well, he kind of already has, hasn't he? He's already stated his bitterness, his complaint, his all the issues that he's struggling with here. The more he speaks, the more all of this comes out. Isn't that the truth? The more words that I speak, the more risk I take of saying something stupid. Especially if I'm dwelling on the feelings behind this and I'm searching for something that I'm not supposed to be searching for, and that's reasoning in this case. Should be searching for God instead of this reasoning and understanding. So as though I were perfect, yet would I not know my own soul, I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore I said it. He destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. So he's come down to the case where he's actually going against what Eliphaz said, what Bildad said. He says that God is actually destroying those who follow after him and those who don't. The perfect would be the mature in this case. And he's saying, hey, listen, it doesn't matter who you are, you could be destroyed. And the point of that is that trials hit for, it doesn't matter who it is. You can find the most godly person in your life and they will still have trials. Some that die early or what we deem as early because we don't understand it and we can't reason through it. And we're like, God, why did you take them so early? They seem to be the most committed to you and they're gone. I've heard that several times in the ministry. People were just questioning, God, why wouldn't you take me instead of them? My sibling was so much better in the ministry and reaching out to people and loving people, being more compassionate, being more merciful. Why didn't you take me instead of them? Job is stating a point here. There's still trials, but is it God destroying God destroying those who follow after him? No, that's off. People still die even though they follow after God. But the thing that I'm looking forward to is what is beyond death. And that's the end of my salvation. The completion of my salvation. I shouldn't say the end of it. The completion and the beginning of my eternity with God in heaven. And that's worth it all. But in the midst of toil, people often forget what's coming. And so is it destruction? No, it's release from this present world. What did Paul say? If I die, great. May Christ be magnified, whether by life or by death. That's what he's focusing on. And that's what we need to help ourselves focus on as well. We go on into the next verses there. And it says in verse 23, if the scourge slays suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. So that's just going a bit far. God doesn't laugh at the trial of the innocent. But at this point, that's how Job feels. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where and who is he? All these things that are happening around us, all these bad things, it seems like the wicked are taking over. I mean, does that represent anything around you here today? I mean, who are some of our leaders today? And would they be an example for God's kingdom? The ones that are on TV all the time, not so much. We see in the midst of the coronavirus, when our country is getting hit hard, economy and everything, how many governors are helping abortion clinics? How much stimulus money is going towards Planned Parenthood in order to help them take more lives that God's created? And we're looking all around, he says, this does not make sense. There's some people that are in the hierarchy that are completely wicked, have nothing to do with God, have no understanding of God. And if they did, they would be pleading for people to go to church. Seek God's face instead of arresting. There's a lot of things that's going on around us that we are offering up questions. We're doing the same thing. Our feelings are getting ahead of us. We're trying to feel for reasoning and understanding in the midst of this crisis. And God, why are you allowing these things to happen? Why are you lifting? It seems like, God, you're lifting up the wicked and putting darkness over those who are following after you. What's going on? It goes on in verse 25. Now my days are swifter than a post, than a runner. That's the term there. As a runner, my days are going so fast, they flee away. They see no good. There's nothing good about this. Every day that passes by, he sees nothing good out of it. It's all hopeless. They are passed away as a swift ships, as the eagle that hasteth to the prey. I don't know if you've ever watched an eagle take down its prey, but it is one of the coolest things. You probably don't want your four-year-old to be watching it, but it's very cool. We had a wild game dinner several years ago up in Michigan where they had birds of prey, and they showed different ones. They showed videos of eagles taking out large animals. I mean, just, it was crazy to be able to watch. They were fast. You don't want to be in the way. And this is what he's like. He's using these illustrations to bring the pictures to our mind. Listen, my days are going so fast. I'm just like the prey here. I can't even see what's going on here. I'm being overtaken. He says, if I say I will forget my complaint, I will leave off my heaviness and comfort myself. I'm afraid of all my sorrows. I know that thou wilt not hold me innocent. He goes on and says, I can try to drop all my complaints. I can just try to act like everything's going okay. Just to try to comfort myself. But that's not doing me any good to fake it. To put on a false facade. He says, if I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? If I'm the wicked one that they're talking about, what am I even working for? What am I pushing forward for? Why am I trying to stay alive? If I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. He says, even if I try to clean up, you're just going to throw me in the ditch. What's the point? Have you ever felt like that with your kids in the sense of you try to put clean clothes on them and all of a sudden they're out jumping in the ditch full of mud? Some of you saw some pictures of my children doing that this past week. And then you try to clean them off and they're screaming their heads off like you're beating them. And it's just because it's a little cold water. But hey, they were just jumping in cold water in mud. And you clean up the house, and guess what? 3 seconds later, they dump the whole entire bin of Legos. Some of you mothers feel helpless in the midst of this coronavirus because you never get a break, right? I mean, think what he is trying to display to us right here. He says, I could try to clean myself up, but there's no point. You'll just throw me in a ditch. He says, for he is not a man as I am that I should answer him. And we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us. There's no mediator. There's no one that's going to come in between us that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him, but it is not so with me. He says, hey, listen, if you take away all of this pain, then I could speak better. I think he's already been speaking. He said, God, you're so powerful. Why don't you just take it all away? I wouldn't be living in fear any longer. Just take it all away. There's this hopeless pleading of his case. Do you recognize that, any of that in your own life? We jump into the last point here. My big question. And it all stems around really one major point in chapter 10. I'll try to run through this. Rather quickly. It says, my soul is weary of my life. I will leave my complaint upon myself. I will speak in the bitterness of my soul. I will say unto God, do not condemn me. Show me wherefore thou contendest with me. Show me what's going on here. Verse 3, is it good unto thee that thou shouldest oppress? That thou shouldest despise the work of thine hands and shine upon the counsel of the wicked? And what he's going to really get at here in this next chapter is saying, he's saying, hey, listen, you've created me. Why would you try to destroy me? You formed me. Why would you why would you want to break that? He says, are you getting some sort of pleasure out of oppression? Out of oppressing me in this time? He says, in verse 4, hast thou eyes of flesh, or seest thou as man seeth? Are you only seeing as we see it, or as you see it, as a God? Are they days as the days of man? Are they years as man's days? Thou inquirest after mine iniquity and searchest after my sin. So you're just like us, and that you're trying to figure out what's going on here. He's saying, thou knowest that I am not wicked, and there is none that can deliver out of thine hand. I am not wicked. I was following after you, but yet no one can deliver me. Verse 9. Or verse 8, I believe. It goes on in verse 8. Thine hands have made me and fashioned me together round about, yet thou dost destroy me. Remember, I beseech thee, that thou hast made me as a clay, and wilt thou bring me into dust again? Hast thou not poured me out as milk and curdled me like cheese? Thou hast clothed me with skin and flesh, and hast fenced me with bones and sinews. Thou hast granted me life and favor, and thy visitation hath preserved my spirit. You've done all these things for me before, only to destroy me. Is this the point that you're trying to make? If I be wicked, woe unto me. If this is really the problem here. If I am really wicked, woe unto me. I've got some major problems coming my way. And if I be righteous, yet will I not lift up my head? I am full of confusion, therefore see thou mine affliction, for it increaseth. Thou huntest me as a fierce lion, and again thou showest thyself marvelous upon me. Here he is confused in his affliction. He feels like he's being hunted. Thou renewest thy witnesses against me, and increases thine indignation upon me. Changes and war are against me. All of these things, here you are, you've created me, and yet all of these problems are coming against me. Why? What's the point? And he goes on and he just asks for relief in these last few verses. It says, wherefore then hast thou brought me forth out of the womb? Oh, that I had given up the ghost, and no eye had seen me. I should have been as though I had not been. I should have been carried from the womb to the grave. He says, I just wish that I had just never survived birth. Are not my days few? Cease then, and let me alone, that I may take comfort a little. Before I go, whence I shall not return, even to the land of darkness and the shadow of death. A land of darkness is darkness itself, and of the shadow of death without any order, and where the light is as darkness. He's just praying, God, would you just let me go? Just give me the peace in my last moments. Just let me go. Just let me die. I just want release. What's going on with Job? We've seen it over and over here again. His fight for reasoning has trumped his fight for God. The more that he questions God, the more his relationship with God seems to break apart. His lack of actually knowing God and pursuing God is drawing him farther and farther away from him. He's not seeing God, even though he knows he's transcendent. He knows that he's different. He knows that he's done all these things. He's got all the power. He knows that our God is great and mighty and wise. And yet he's pulled away from those truths and he's saying, why are you attacking me? I want to know. The bitterness eating away from the truth that God's already given him. It's taking control. He switched from knowing the truth and standing on it to fighting it. Not fighting for it, fighting against it. According to Job, God's been the attacker. He sees no hope. no relationship with God. He wouldn't see him if you passed right by him. He wouldn't, if God actually spoke to him, he wouldn't believe that it was God speaking. He's hopeless. I just want to close it out with this. Don't let your search for meaning take precedence over your search for God in the midst of your trials. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart and lean not into thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him and he shall direct thy path. Don't make your search for meaning, reasoning, trying to understand what's going around you, take precedence over your search for God. Rest in who he is, because God's got this. Let's pray. Dear Lord, I thank you for helping us see another page in Job's struggle. This raw depression that is coming out, and we're experiencing this. We're trying to understand it. God, help us to see with the sight of looking at what's going on with Job to help ourselves in the midst of our own grief. Or as we counsel others, Lord, help us to be able to see you in the midst and search for you rather than search for meaning behind everything. Help us to rest in you. Help us to look into the author and finisher of our faith. God, open our eyes that we may see these glimpses of truth you have for me. God, we love you so much. In Jesus' name, amen. As we close out here this evening, I would just ask for you to really focus on how you respond in the midst of your circumstances and your trials. Do you respond by trying to focus all of your attention on meaning and understanding, reasoning? This doesn't reason in my mind or feeling. Or are you focusing that on God? How much have you looked to God in the midst of this virus that's going on, this all the craziness that's happening around us? Are you focusing on him, resting in him? That's the question that we need to ask. So pray. Respond in prayer right now. Intercede on the behalf of others. You know others are struggling with this. You know others are trying to fight what's going on around them, and they're struggling with depression, with grief, whatever that might be. Intercede. And pray for yourself as well, that you'll rest in him. I hope that will help you through this next week. Hope to see you soon. Talk to you later.